KFMB. San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
Welcome. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to It's Your Money and Your Life. I'm Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer on this hot Sunday night, actually this hot weekend, broadcasting in 50,000 watts of power, reaching not just San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle when conditions are right, out to the desert. And now it's my pleasure to introduce the main man of the hour and my other co-host, who is a philanthropist, a marathon runner, a CPA extraordinaire, a family office expert to many high net worth families, a core member of Strategic Trusted Advisors Roundtable of San Diego, a family man, all around good guy, and his name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well, enjoying this not quite so blazingly hot weather that we had today compared to Friday and Saturday when I thought I was going to, like the Wicked Witch of the West, melt into the ground.
Well, you know what? I can handle the, when the humidity is 16-18%, I don't mind, but it's back up to the 73%, and the humidity, I think I'm allergic to. I mean, I just, oh my gosh.
I guess there's only 14% humidity yesterday. That was incredible.
But you made the good point before the show. We were talking about the blackout last year, and
yeah, it's about the one-year anniversary coming up.
Yeah, God forbid it was, this past Friday, Saturday, when the lights and power went out and the heat stayed on. My gosh. So, but anyway, before we get into tonight's show, I've got a good friend, and everyone out in the audience probably knows who she is, Carol LeBeau, who is dealing with breast cancer. She had surgery a few months ago, and we're going to get her on here at least via phone in a month or two, but she's recovering well, I want everyone to know, and she's doing great, so everything looks fine for her. She's a tough, strong lady and a real fighter. And she's going to do fine. So she's apparently everything's remission. Everything's looking good. So hello to Carol and Tom, and our best to you.
And Joe, It's Your Money and Your Life is going to do some special things in October, because October is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Absolutely. So we'll be doing more of that. Hey, how about the Chargers today?
I didn't see it, but I saw the final score.
Yeah, it was 102 degrees on the field, I understand. Maybe even a little hotter, but man, they're 2-0, and I think after tomorrow night, there'll only be a couple of undefeated teams in the league. So, hey, they're starting out
playing good defense.
They are, and they were 3 out of 4. I know preseason doesn't mean much, but they were 3 out of 4 there. So they're on a winning streak here, as are the Padres. And I had a little exchange. They have had a miraculous turnaround this season, haven't they?
They are only 6 games out of the wild card. Now, there's probably not enough time left in the season, but way back when they were 19-40, it looks like they were going to lose 100 games. But
they were at least 20, 21 games under 500.
Yeah, now they're up to 71-76 and only 6 games out in the wild card.
15 games to go, but hey, they've been 7-2 at home this last homestand, and who knows? They might make it real interesting before the season's out in early October. But anyway, then Richard, you have posted another fantastic video on YouTube that I think our listeners might like to know about business succession planning.
Yes, it's about what great business succession planning looks like. You can watch it on YouTube. Just Google Richard Muzio. Again, last name is spelled M-U-S-C-I-O. So Google Richard M-U-S-C-I-O YouTube.
We'll go to YouTube and search that, right?
Yeah, it'll come right up. Right. And you can also type in accounting thought leader as a search term. If you type in accounting thought leader, I come up number one on the page.
Right.
So I'm number one.
Right. And also, if they just go to iymoney.com, we can find all of your all of the videos there. Right?
I'm there too.
Presentations.
But my press release made it into the Wall Street Journal.
Yes, congratulations.
Thanks.
On that. So congratulations. So on our website, all the podcasts are there, including tonight's. And our guest is getting anxious over here, but we've got a lot of time, so we're going to get to him in a moment. But all the podcasts are there. We take the commercials out. So iymoney.com, a lot of great information there. So help yourself. In any case, tonight's guest was a senior executive at one of the great companies ever to originate in San Diego County, one of the Fortune 500 companies, and the company is Qualcomm, and this gentleman was there for 14 years, and He was a senior executive, and now he's into the sustainable intelligence field, and his bailiwick is really all about energy and conservation and a great strategy in that sphere. So I'd like to welcome to the microphones tonight Alan Ball. Alan, how are you tonight?
I'm great, Joe. Thank you, and I'm pleased to be here.
Excellent, excellent. And we should thank our good friend Rena Horowitz, who you've known since 1970. She's a La Jolla-an, and I just want to say hi to her because she introduced me to you. She introduces everybody to everybody, and she's a real valuable person in San Diego. She is into a lot of philanthropies and things like that. So hello to Rena, and thank you. So Alan, you were born and raised where, West Coast? Or?
Well, actually, I was born in a little town in Michigan called Saginaw,
mm-hmm.
but I moved to San Diego when I was 10, mm-hmm. and I've lived here pretty much ever since.
Wow. Okay. So what year was that when you moved here?
1955.
Wow, it was a sleepy little...
It was. the El Cortez Hotel was the tallest building in town.
Wow.
And
the glass elevator,
it
right?
It was, yes, that was a weekend adventure to go and ride the glass elevator.
And I think a lot of the radio and TV stations were downtown, right? Did you ever poke your heads in on any of those? Or no? I think a lot of the radio was down there. Well, everything was downtown. There was no Mission Valley or Fashion Valley.
The old Pickwick Hotel, which is now the M Hotel, had transmission towers on its roof, Joe.
Yes, and that was the original site of KFMB. And then
That's correct.
Then they moved over to Pacific Highway, I believe, and Ash up until, I think, 46 or 50. And then when TV came into being, they moved up here. By the way, we had Lampley on, and you said he was the greatest broadcaster in boxing in the history of the universe. I was cracking. The only reason I laughed is because TV's only been around since, I think, 1950. So,
well, don't hold that against Jim. Come on.
But I wanted to qualify that. I wasn't laughing at your. I mean, I just thought that was that long of a time to be the history of the universe.
But plus, Howard Cosell is dead, so Howard cannot complain.
But anyway, so Alan born moved to San Diego when he was 10 years old, 1955. And then, tell us about your professional career and then how you wound up at Qualcomm, because
sure.
That must be interesting.
The funny part about that, I was working for 2 years up in the Portland area in Beaverton for a company. I was working at a company called Tektronix,
mm-hmm.
which is a manufacturer of test equipment. But I was working for another company called Morrison Knudsen, which was a service provider to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been working for Morrison Knudsen in San Diego, and they closed down their project, so they closed down their office this year and invited me to go up there. And it looked like the only opportunity at the moment. So I did. My wife stayed here, and because she was employed at Intuit. And so I went up to work in Beaverton and commuted on weekends back and forth. And through a series of events, I got contacted by Qualcomm and came down for a job interview and so on. But the funny part is when I finally got a job offer from Qualcomm, I called my wife and I told her I have some good news, some really good news, and some not so good news. And she said, well, tell me. And I said, well, the good news is I got the job. I'm coming home. The bad news is you got to get your clothes out of my closet.
She started to spread out, huh? Well, that happens. So,
what year did you join Qualcomm?
That was 1995.
Okay.
And when did they? Were they founded? What year was that? It had to be
1987, as I recall.
So
I'm pretty sure it was 87.
Pretty early.
Yeah.
Were you at senior level right from the start? And
No. Okay. I came in at a junior position, but certainly a middle level position, mm-hmm. as a what they call a subcontract administrator.
Mm-hmm.
And worked my way up.
So what did you do there originally?
Yeah. I negotiated contracts for different, all manner of services that the corporation required, mm-hmm. to operate.
And then ultimately you were in charge of all their real estate, right?
Well, I was in charge of all of the contracting for construction, design. I was also in charge of the procurement department for non-product mm-hmm. procurement. I was in charge of the food services, the environmental health and safety, the events, which included the Irwin Jacobs Auditorium, if you've been there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Beautiful place. Mm-hmm.
And the energy management and sustainability. Yeah. And a lot of it, energy management function was associated with implementing strategies within the corporation to reduce demand and increase
efficiency. And, of course, you guys were growing by leaps and bounds. When you started the company, how many employees as opposed to now?
My employee number was 3308, and they presumably started with one.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the 3,308th employee.
About 15,000 now, right?
Yes. It's over 20.
Wow. Wow.
So it's a big
So you, you were busy managing this growth, right?
I was, yeah.
So that's
We, you know, gave me the opportunity to travel all over the world and spend time in some really interesting places like India and China and Thailand, and it was quite an adventure.
They have offices all over those
places? They do. Oh. Qualcomm has a fairly substantial employee base in Europe, India for sure, China for sure, and a number of other locations.
Hmm.
What year did Qualcomm get interested in energy or sustainability?
About 1990.
So before you were hired?
No. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I should say 2000.
2000. Okay. 2000. So after you were hired.
Yeah, 2000.
Okay.
Interesting story is that we got interested in trying to figure out how to save money.
Mm-hmm.
And the energy portion of the budget, which is not uncommon at most large corporations, is the second largest line item after salaries. So. Mm-hmm. It was an area where you could any improvement that you could make mm-hmm. went straight to the bottom line. There was no didn't just disappear into thin air. It produced additional profit for the corporation. Mm-hmm. So we looked at it from that perspective. At the same time, concurrently, there was a movement driven largely by the state of California to look at climate change and reducing emissions, and we were approached by an organization called the California Climate Action Registry to participate with them as a charter member, which we did do, and I had the privilege of serving on their first technical advisory council, as well as being awarded one of their first awards for helping to grow that organization.
Was there a catalyst at Qualcomm that sort of led that charge? I mean, how did it come to be that, I know you wanted to increase profit by reducing costs, but was there a person or a group of people who said, you know what, this is what we should be looking at?
Yes, there was. The group of people included myself, of course, and my immediate supervisor, a guy named Jim Callahan, who is also retired at this time and is a partner in my sustainable intelligence enterprise.
Excellent.
And were you entrusted with that job, or did that just happen spontaneously?
Both. Yeah. I was entrusted
all
to,
of the above.
To spontaneously do the job.
Okay.
We looked at...
Alan, could you please hold that thought, though? I apologize. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life after these short... All right, now we're getting a little funky there. Richard, do you remember this song?
I do.
This is the OJs.
The OJs.
I thought just a little departure from our TV theme. We're going to get back to the TV theme for the bummer, but I just always liked this song. Anyway, let's get back with our wonderful topic and with Alan Ball, senior executive at Qualcomm now and with Sustainable Intelligence, and Richard had some questions about culture.
Yes, when we were so rudely interrupted. I was just curious about the culture at Qualcomm, about how it came to pass that besides just looking at the bottom line profit as it related to energy and sustainability, if it was a concerted effort or culturally the company sort of promoted this kind of innovation or question asking and answering and seeking. So how did it come to pass? You said it was accidentally on purpose.
About 2000, right? You said the year.
Right. The whole thing started, and I have to attribute a lot of it to the efforts of Jim Callahan, who I mentioned previously, and a woman who didn't work for Qualcomm, who was starting up the California Climate Action Registry.
What was her name?
That's putting me on the spot. Okay. Well, her first name's Diane. I remember for sure.
California Climate Action Registry.
Yeah, Diane, and her last name will come to me as I pull away from the station in my car. But Diane approached Qualcomm to join the registry at the same time that we were looking at energy management as a cost-effective thing. And there was another force at work also, and that was the deregulation. If you remember energy deregulation.
Yeah.
Energy deregulation meant that companies like Qualcomm, large users, could go out and contract for their own power directly from what are called merchant generators or third-party providers and buy the power from them rather than to take it from SDG&E at SDG&E's kind of dictated prices. So we did that. We went out and negotiated our own contracts with...
Now, that's a good point because all that Enron scandal and everything else, did you guys get... I know a lot of small businesses were getting... their bills were going through the... through the roof. Was 500, now 3,000. What had happened to you guys? You must have really had an impact. Huh?
Nothing bad. Everything good happened
really?
To us.
Well, you were on top of it.
The issue was, well, there was an issue. Enron was certainly, as you know, history has shown, unscrupulous. And they did deals that were not in the best interest of their customers. And resulting from those deals, a lot of even larger entities. I know there were a number of municipalities in San Diego that were doing deals with Enron. And then when that imploded, they got stuck with high prices and they got eventually abandoned by their provider. But that was an unscrupulous company with a lot of power. And a lot of influence.
I think you meant Enron was unscrupulous, not Qualcomm.
No,
yes. Yeah, Enron,
yeah,
Joe.
Yeah,
because I thought he said Qualcomm.
No, I want to clarify
the record.
And Enron did approach me. I talked to them. I looked at their deal. I said, this deal is not a good deal. I'm not doing this deal.
Wow.
But they were a very sales-driven organization. They had very powerful folks that were able to convince an awful lot of people to sign up.
So when that whole energy market went haywire, Qualcomm was in a good, because they did not get suckered into the deal, and Sempra or these other companies did? Is that what happened?
Yes. I wouldn't say Sempra.
Whatever the local consumer energy company was at times. I know they've changed the entities or here and there, and I certainly don't want to cast aspersions, but obviously the consumers had major issues with energy back then,
They did. The state of California did. The whole western United States had problems because the energy traders, particularly Enron, were trading up the price without cause. They were using different trading mechanisms.
So where were you guys getting your energy? That's interesting that you guys weren't impacted, that you were shrewd enough not to get involved with them.
At that time... there was a company that was called Strategic Energy. It subsequently got bought out by another company called Direct Energy, which is based out of Toronto, Canada. And at that time, that was the provider for Qualcomm. At the present time, their provider is Shell. Shell, actually, a lot of people don't know this, but Shell has a huge trading floor right here in San Diego over on Gateway Drive. Probably several hundred traders sitting in front of computers all day long trading.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Shell is really like Shell Oil, Shell Energy.
Well, it's the same company. This division is called Shell Energy. But
you learn something every day.
Wow.
I love this show.
Yeah. So anyway, we started focusing on how much energy we use, where we use it, how we use it. And we started learning how the billing system works. So some really interesting complications and things about how billing works for companies that causes your bill to be higher than it has to be. Because if you aren't careful about how you run your infrastructure equipment, it drives your bill up.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some real opportunities, and still are today, mm-hmm. for many companies to realize substantial savings from what they're paying today by simply changing behavior. Don't have to buy anything, don't have to invest in anything, don't have to, do anything but stop doing the way you do something and start doing it.
What would be some changes that would be effective?
Let's say typically in a small manufacturing operation that isn't going 24/7, some guy walks in at 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning and throws all the switches on,
mm-hmm.
which triggers an event that's called a goodness,
A money-wasting event.
it's a demand.
A non-sequential demand
mm-hmm. charge. Mm-hmm. And it triggers a charge that the utility charges you for the rest of the year based on the number of kilowatts that you trigger at that moment. If you had the same series of events where the individual came in at 5:30 and turned on one thing and waited 15 minutes and turned on another and so on, where they didn't trigger this huge
demand
surge of demand at one time, your bill would actually go down a substantial amount. Now, we're talking probably thousands of dollars.
Huh. Interesting.
And when I get into my office, I'm always the first one in. I only turn on the lights at my workstation. I walk in the dark in many mornings and only turn on my lights, but not the lights to the entire office building.
That's very good. Hey, we got some music coming up, but that means we have to take a break. News, sports, weather, and announcements. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life after this. All right, we are back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life with that great bonanza music, reminiscent of the great Sunday nights. You remember that, don't you, Alan?
Oh, absolutely. I was a bonanza fan.
The Cartwrights, right?
That's right. Anyway, we're back with Alan Ball, and Richard wants to thank some sponsors.
I want to thank UBS, Mr. Michael Corancho and Drew Freitas, for being our sponsor. Also, Regents Bank, Sean Puckett, Steve Sefton, everybody at Regents Bank. Carl Sheeler and Business Valuations Limited, our favorite CPA firm on the planet. Polito Epic with Don Epic CPA and Paul Polito CPAs. Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics. Rich Gaines and Family Legacy Legal. And next week's guest and our newest sponsor, Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives. Joel is going to show us next week how we can save tons of working capital if we happen to be a business that owns its own real estate. So again, thank you to all of our sponsors, because we really, really do appreciate you all.
Yes, those VIPs are terrific, and we appreciate them very much. Alan, UCSD, I've talked about them before. They generate in the neighborhood of 90% of their own energy. And we were discussing at the break how Qualcomm could maybe perhaps adapt some of their methodologies. What was your response?
Well, UCSD actually is leading edge, no mm-hmm. question about it, in terms of the projects that they've invested in and the systems they have in place and the people that mm-hmm. are working there to keep that going. They had a central plant with a combined heat and power application, not dissimilar from the ones that Qualcomm has. But they also recently implemented another generation technology, a fuel cell. Mm. And originally, the concept was that, and this fuel cell is actually owned by a third party, mm-hmm. And they purchased the power generated by the fuel cell from the third party at, and I don't have access to their contract, of course, but I know how these generally work, at a slight discount over what they would be paying SDG&E for the same mm-hmm. power. So they're saving money.
Those are called, purchase power agreements,
yes,
right?
Yes, power purchase agreements.
Mm-hmm. Power PPAs, okay.
PPAs. And these typically run, not uncommon to run 10 to 20 years, mm-hmm. Because they are developed based on the life cycle of the equipment. So if a fuel cell is going to last approximately 20 years, then the contract is most probably a 20-year contract. And the arrangement that this company was making with a potential customer was they initially planned to harvest methane gas from the sewage processing plant at Point Loma, mm-hmm. Put it on compressed gas hauling trucks, and haul it to the site where the fuel cell was actually physically located and burn it at the site. Unfortunately, or fortunately, really probably in the final analysis, this concept didn't really work out very well for a number of reasons. The logistics were monumental in terms of transporting and storing.
There's a little liability issue, right?
Yeah,
perhaps.
All that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So they were eventually able to work out an arrangement with SDG&E that allows them to inject the methane, which has been treated to bring it up to a clear standard, inject the methane into the pipeline at the sewage processing plant and burn it at the at UCSD. Mm-hmm. Well, the actual reality is the molecules that they're injected into the pipe at the sewer plant and the molecules being burned at the UCSD are not the same molecules. They're right. They're totally different. But the concept worked, and it made the project economically feasible.
So they pipe it up to the university, well, basically, right?
No, they don't. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, they don't?
The methane that is injected into the pipeline at the sewage treatment plant is not the same gas that's being burned at UCSD. That gas is going to the pipeline at the sewage processing plant. I can't say for sure where it's being burned, but it might be burned downtown San Diego or Mission Hills or wherever. Because once it's in the pipeline, you can't control it. It just kind of
mingles. So where is UCSD getting their methane from? Though?
Well, it's not. They're taking natural gas from the same pipeline they would have taken from otherwise. They're just getting credit for the methane being inserted into the pipeline at the sewage treatment plant.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
Didn't you back in 1992 work on that project when the pipe broke?
Actually, the pipe that I worked on was the sewage disposal pipe itself.
Oh, the pipe itself. Okay.
Yeah.
About 20 years ago?
Yes.
Okay.
What happened, or as near as what can be determined happened, is a very large vessel, most probably a military naval vessel of some sort or other, but that has never been confirmed,
yeah.
dragged a line or an anchor across the pipeline. When the sewage is processed, it goes into this huge pipe. You could actually drive a truck through it. It's about 15 feet in diameter.
Wow.
That's installed on the floor of the ocean and goes 5 miles out into the ocean where the...
At what point was it broken, though? How far?
Right at the surf break.
Oh, jeez. And, of course, the America's Cup was going on, I think. And
yes, it was. It, yeah.
That's what I remember because of
that was the international... We created international stink with that, didn't we?
Yeah. We took the offices when Dennis Connor, when the America's Cup event was over, Dennis Connor and his team were renting a building from a family called Driscoll, who's still in big business down there on the harbor, doing boat repairs and that kind of thing. And we rented that very same building, and we were in the building where he was running the America's Cup out of, so it was kind of interesting.
No.
But you always get the straight poop on it, your money and your life.
But then now transferring all that technology over to Qualcomm, tell us what the innovations they made in terms of their energy conservation and usage.
Well, unbeknownst to many people, Qualcomm built and still owns and works out of the largest gold LEED certified building in the world. LEED is a certification that was established by the U.S. Green Building Council to provide some acknowledgement for folks who developed very high efficient properties that included such things as using reclaimed water in their restrooms, using daylighting instead of electric lighting, using
waterless urinals, probably.
Waterless urinals, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Reclaim irrigation, and just list goes on and
motion
on.
Motion sensors.
Motion sensors, mm-hmm. High efficiency, air handling equipment, solar panels, and combined heat and power applications with turbines and absorption chillers. So Qualcomm built this building. It's generally known that Qualcomm is building W, but it's a 12-story building, about 420,000 square feet. It houses a enormous data center with all the servers that Qualcomm uses for providing services to its staff and employees all over the world. And it's gold certified.
Hmm. Excellent.
And it includes combined heat and power generation system that generates about 14 megawatts of power. And that system uses the turbine engines developed by Solar Turbines right here in San Diego. So it's a nice local partnership. And the solar panels that are installed at that site are Kyocera panels, which are manufactured in Tijuana.
Hmm. Which is another company.
And Alan, you made the point that the real momentum behind Qualcomm's green efforts really came from the rank and file. Is that right? The rank and file employees, as opposed to
Yes. There was no resistance from senior management. Business case had to be presented, obviously, and justified. But the drivers were actually the employees that worked in the department I worked in, which was called Real Estate and Facilities, clerks, people, drivers, janitorial staff, people that were touching the products that had the influences on such things as recycling, reuse, energy.
And plus, if it reduced expense, obviously that would get the attention of senior management. If you're cutting, saving some substantial money,
it did. So. The combined heat and power application alone was estimated to be saving about $6 million a year.
Oh, wow.
That's nothing to sneeze at. Hey, we should thank Diane Wittenberg. Right?
Yes.
Let's thank her.
During the break, I remembered that Diane Wittenberg was the first director of the California Climate Action Registry, and she built that organization from absolutely probably her computer and her bedroom into a world leader in encouraging companies all over the United States and now arguably all over the world to begin to implement these strategies that would reduce emissions.
So, Alan, here in San Diego, what percentage of companies that are of decent size do you think actually focus on green initiatives, if you had to guess?
Actually, a fairly large number do. There's an organization, there are other organizations, of course, but there's one organization, it's called the Industrial Environmental Association. Not too many people outside of industry know about it. It was started up here in San Diego by a lady named Patty Krebs, who originally was a staff member for Pete Wilson's staff when he was governor. And she took this organization and built it up. It has about 700 members at this time. Unfortunately, she passed away several years ago. But the organization still exists and it has about 700 members. And their focus is on environmental and water. And water is a big issue, obviously, at Qualcomm and everywhere. Water, energy, air quality, and several other special fields, and almost every major company in San Diego belongs to that organization and has their staff people that are responsible for those functions involved in that.
And then we should talk a little about AB 32, because I know you were a big proponent of that, and it did pass, but I'm not so sure we're meeting all the goals that were intended by it, right?
Joe, explain what AB 32 was, because most of our listeners probably don't know.
Well, it was a proposition, right? Well, let Alan explain, because he knows better than I. He was a big advocate.
AB 32 was it was legislation that will require companies in the state of California to reduce their emissions through and the workforce that are staffing people at the state have identified. There's a whole series of publications of different kinds of activities that companies can do, but it essentially requires the companies to reduce their carbon footprint, and I believe the measurement is to 1990 levels by 2020.
Mm-hmm. Sexier version of the Perry Mason theme there. The Richard Gleason Orchestra. Good find there, Kevin. Anyway, we're back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life with Richard Musio and our wonderful guest, Alan Ball, senior executive from Qualcomm Retired, who is now with one of the founders of Sustainable Intelligence LLC.com, if you just go there. But Sustainable Intelligence LLC.com, you can find out all about what they do. As a matter of fact, Alan, maybe you should tell us a little bit more about what you guys
but
do.
But briefly, it's Alan, A-L-A-N, at sustainableintelligencegroup.com. Right. And Alan's phone number is 858-829-2471.
Okay, sure. Thank you for the opportunity to do that, Joe and Richard. Sustainable Intelligence was and is an effort by myself and my partner, Jim Callahan, to take to the community of San Diego the skills in the sustainable development area that we had implemented at Qualcomm. And so it's part action and part products and materials and systems, but it's part people. A lot of the issues that companies deal with today that would help them be more sustainable have little to do with investing in additional materials and systems, and a lot to do with how the people that work for them perceive the contribution that they can make. Mm-hmm. For example, a lot of people don't think about this, but employers provide parking spaces for employees because employees drive to work. Mm-hmm. But we found that if you encourage employees to carpool or to take public transit and incentivize them, they will frequently do that. And at some point in time, that means you have to buy less parking spaces to give to them for parking. So there's a direct economic benefit. Same with...
You do all that cost analysis for them then?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Excellent, yeah. Excellent.
Then for taking a look at recycling and reusing and such things as office supplies, paper, pencils, all those kinds of things that people have a tendency to throw away or put in a drawer and forget about. And if you develop a program that encourages people to get that those items out and reuse them, either themselves or for others in the company. So there's a lot of, if you go into a typical company, every employee has their own little storeroom of stuff in their, office. And of course, the company's paid for that. So you've got, in many cases, you could have hundreds of thousands of dollars of pencils and paper sitting in somebody's drawer.
Mm-hmm. How many paper clips does one person need, honestly?
That's it.
Of course, you get some of these pack rats, you know, so people like to hoard things. I've heard nightmare stories about in senior community centers where they're hoarding the sugars and the cereals from the cafeteria into their apartment units, and they've gone in there and they open the cabs and tons of stuff just fall out. So there's some people that have that mentality for some reason.
Alan, you've got an event coming up that you're speaking at, right?
Yeah, let's talk about that, Joe. This is the Green Policy Forum. There are going to be a lot of San Diego candidates for office there. It's going to be Thursday, October 4th at 5 o'clock, 5 to 9. Alan's speaking there. And so far they have mayoral candidate Bob Filner, who's been a guest on this show. They'll have Scott Peters running for Congress. He will be a guest on this show. Dave Roberts is running for supervisor, Dr. Shirley Weber, R.J. Hernandez, Pat Hurley, and, of course, you are one of the speakers there, one of the moderators, right, Alan?
Yes. A nonprofit that I founded called the Sustainability Alliance of Southern California sponsoring the event. We're very, very delighted to be co-sponsoring that with the Emerald Green organization. Mm-hmm. And Cricket Communications is providing the venue, and we're grateful for that.
And they're up where? Up in Sorna Valley somewhere?
Or? No, they're just east of 805 at Claremont Mesa Boulevard. The street is called Copley. You drive north from Claremont Mesa Boulevard. You can see the building from the 805 on the east side, south of 52.
I'm trying to think, the courthouse. Okay, so the other...
There's Cricket, there's North Island Federal Credit Union.
Okay.
There are large office buildings there.
It's not far from KFMB, actually.
No.
It's not far from where we are.
No,
right
it's
now.
Not far at all. No.
And it's $20, and you get a meal and beverages and easy parking and a wonderful forum that night. So if you want to find out more... Oh, I think we'll get some information on our website. What do you say, Richard?
Yeah, just send it up to Courtney. We'll put it up there.
Yeah, but sdforum2012.eventbrite, which is B-R-I-T-E.com. Kind of difficult. We'll get it on our website, so make it easy for you to find it, iymoney.com, and you'll be able to find it that
way. So, Alan, if there's one thing you could tell a company about how to become sustainable, what's the most important thing you can say to a company to get them motivated to actually affect positive change in this area?
That's a very good question, and there's so many things that come to my mind. I think the one thing that I would tell them is that there's a real opportunity for them to dramatically impact the quality of the life of their employees and still save money.
Not just their employees, but their customers, their constituents. Their
entire chain.
Right.
Their customers, their suppliers, which is one of the other kinds of services that Sustainable Intelligence does. I have a long history of procurement and supply chain management, and you can green your supply chain very easily just by focusing on a few simple things that not only impacts, and it's a good point, I thank you for bringing that up, not only impacts your operation, but the operation of your suppliers and ultimately your customers.
So in other words, it's a true collaborative effort.
Yeah. Alan, thank you so much. Alan Ball with SustainableIntelligenceLLC.com. Look on our website, iymoney.com. We'll link up to him, and you'll be able to find him there. Thank you for being with us. Richard, wonderful seeing you again. You have a great week.
You too, Joe.
And
Alan, thank you.
Yes,
thank you,
and we want to thank Kevin Terrell, our board operator, and Craig Blanke, our account executive, and also Dave Sniff, our programming genius here at KFMB. And in the coming weeks, October 21, we'll have Scott Peters on for the hour and his exit interview, Mayor Jerry Sanders, November 18. He'll be here for the hour, and he'll be able to get a lot off his chest. So, yeah, you have a great week. Stay cool, everybody. Keep hydrated. Keep cool. We'll see you next Sunday night. Good night now.